Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
I'm sure that you're very familiar with that statistic that 50% of all marriages end in divorce. And when you hear that statistic, you probably walk away thinking, you know, marriage is a crapshoot, 50-50, heads or tails, and that you have just as much chance to make it as not. But in truth, the truth really is that it's both more hopeful and also sobering, because not every marriage is created equal in terms of beating those odds. There are things that you can do that improve your chances of success. But on the flip side, there are also some things that can happen that really put your marriage at risk. And one of those things that is most damaging to a marriage is one of the big reasons that most people get married in the first place. They're the children. I call them gremlins. And, you know, believe it or not, your marriage is at its greatest risk in the first 7 years, and most of that time, or the time that it's about breaking up, is people break up because they have a baby. And to talk about why this is and how you can protect your marriage as you become parents, I'm joined by marriage counselor and author Zach Brittle. Zach, thanks so much for being on the show to talk about this really, really important topic.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And, you know, part of the reason, I mean, I've said this for years, and we in the business know that there are two blips. Blips probably aren't quite the right words. Humps of when people tend to get divorced. The first hump is right around year 7 or 8. That's usually about the time that people have gotten married and had kids and have had enough time for things to kind of go south. And then, of course, the other hump is right about the year 25, which is about the time the kids leave home, empty nest, and now you're staring across the kitchen table wondering who the heck the two of you are and why you're together. So, you know, you wrote
maybe the best way to stay married is to not have kids.
Well, I think that's actually what it shows. But you wrote an article that appeared in the Washington Post, and it's called "When Three's Not the Charm: How to Manage the Higher Risk of Divorce When Baby Comes Along." And, you know, you confirmed what we in the business know about that first bump in divorce. And, you know, what prompted you to write the article?
Oh, man, I don't know. I think I get to spend a lot of time. I'm based in Seattle, so that's where I live and breathe, and it's where I'm also a parent. I have two children myself. They're older now. They're 10 and nearly 14. But I spend a lot of time with young families, either in my private practice or I get invited to speak around town to young family groups a lot. And I think that there are all these questions that they have, that people have, and they just tend to kind of be the wrong questions, frankly. And so part of what was driving me was making sure that people could wrap their head around the things that really do matter, not the color of the nursery or not the, you know, the which stroller you get, but really how do you protect kind of your most important asset, which is your relationship, which is frankly what your kids need the most. They need you guys to be, they need parents to be solid,
right?
Not, they don't need like the best, you know, baby Bjorn. I don't know if they have baby Bjorns anymore. But.
Yeah, well, I mean, nowadays, at least in the United States, all of the products have to be tested. So, you know, a stroller is a stroller is a stroller in terms of your baby's safety. It's just, but, you know, and I know, because it's like when I was pregnant with my first child eons ago, back, as my children would say, in the days of covered wagons and horses, you know, the book What to Expect When You're Expecting was the most popular book, and I think it still is. But that whole book talks about what's happening to you physically and what to expect, and, you know, then of course what to expect in the first 2 years, and there's a whole series of them. But nowhere in those books do they talk about the impact of a baby on your marriage.
Yeah, I mean, and in part because we didn't quite know, right? We knew it was hard, and we knew that it was inconvenient. We knew that it was also wonderful and amazing, and And, you know, it kind of created this, you know, thing that we called becoming a family. I always sort of push back on that, because I think that when you choose to knit your life with someone, you become a family, you know, husband, wife, mm-hmm. mom, dad, whatever. And when you have a baby, you're just adding to that family. And I think that we put a lot of sort of misdirected energy into what the baby's going to do, and that means that our energy is kind of taken away from our partner, right? Our sort of our core unit. As you said, you know, like the second sort of divorce bump is after the kids leave, and I think that's really telling, because it, you know, when you turn all your attention to your kids and you fail to nurture and nurse the really the relationship that you're going to have longest, theoretically, you know.
Right.
You know, people look across the couch after their kids go to college and they go, oh, well, now what do we do? You know, and I think that right. question has to be answered 18 years ago, or at
right.
least begin to be answered 18 years ago.
Well, I mean, I tell people that your children, for the most part, can't divorce you, but your spouse can.
Yeah.
And that seems to come as a shock to people, and I really do think that our society actually encourages that on a couple of different aspects, because just like you said, people don't think or that when they get married they're forming a family, but they are, and a lot of the things that they need to do at that time, you know, about setting their own traditions and creating their own focus, needs to happen before the baby. I mean, one of the things that I've seen with a lot of my clients is they kind of continue to do the holiday thing the way that they've always done it. Now, in my particular case, I sort of got lucky because, you know, we only lived near one set of parents, so we were never, you know, drawn and quartered between, you know, well, you know, so, but a lot of couples still try to do that. And the only time they actually think about setting their own traditions is once a baby's there. But that's what I tell people. I said, I think you need to start deciding how you want to deal with this as soon as you are an established couple.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, the biggest thing that people need to do is just understand that there's a kind of a profound philosophical shift when you have a baby. I mean, it's just, it's not just a practical shift. It's actually philosophical. And we, you know, we define these ideas of mom and dad based on our own parents. And that sometimes they're really great. Sometimes our parents have set really great examples for us. And sometimes they're not. And we work really hard to resist that. But I think when parents don't sort of create some intentionality around defining that shift for themselves, then they just sort of default into the easiest pattern. And often because you're sleep deprived and you're spread thin and your energy and you're dirty all the time, you don't default to your best self. You default to sort of your most, sort of your cranky, weakest, most tired, what do they call it? Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, you know?
Oh, the hangry, so, yeah, you know. The hangry, yeah.
Yeah, and that has an impact on your relationship, you know? And I don't want to hang out with my wife when she's not at her best, and she doesn't, and vice versa. So that the babies tend to draw that out of you, even subtly, I think.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because I will always tell people that if it takes 60 to 90 days for a new behavior to become a habit, I don't care how precocious your children are, at 90 days, they still can't function for themselves. So
right.
it's really about the intentions that you set up. And, you know, you talked about this a little bit, about the tensions that a baby creates in a marriage, and I think that it's like anything else. We're never supposed to talk about how tough it is. And I always would laugh when I would, you know, my kids were little and I'd get the parenting magazines and all this stuff, and there was always an ad, and it was Johnson & Johnson, and I know who it was, probably baby lotion or something, I can't remember what it was about, but here's this, you know, woman in this lovely white nightgown bathed in golden light with the baby sleeping peacefully in her arms, and I'm like going, if you get one night like that,
mm-hmm.
count your blessings. You know, it's like, yeah, there's no baby spit up, there's no, I mean, oh, by the way, her hair was completely immaculate, you know, it's like, I remember forbidding my husband from leaving the house in the morning to go to work until after I'd had a shower.
Yes.
You know, but we don't talk about the stressful times, and you know, and I think that, don't you think that kind of sets parents up for kind of unrealistic expectations?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think that people work really hard. Well, not always. It's kind of easy to have a baby, I guess, in some places. But often, when you're having a baby on purpose, you've created some deliberateness around that. You worked hard, you've prepared, and you've sort of wound yourself up. But when the reality hits, you know, we haven't necessarily prepared for that, you know. And do you know you can go longer without water than sleep? Like, that's just.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, and so when children enter the picture and it disrupts sleep, you know, it really messes just at the simplest one with your biorhythm, you know, and it can make you depressed, and that can open you up to being irritable and you know, not eating well, and you not even talk about the exercise that you're not going to get. I mean, it takes a long time, like you said, to recover, in more than 60 or 90 days to sort of recover from childbirth. You know, women, they lose their bodies in a sense. Like, they've created this amazing, wonderful creature, but now they have to feed it with their body unless they choose not to breastfeeding. And that makes sex change, and, you know, men are like, hey, when can we have intimacy again? And I popped up on that one, too, because I think that... there's a major flaw there. Like, intimacy and intercourse are not the same. And
exactly.
When I say that in groups, the moms are like, hooray, and the dads are like, oh, man. But I think that there's this sort of myth that if I'm not having sex, I'm not being intimate, and that we're not ready for that, right? And so I think that there's the baby's tension. It's not caused by the baby, right? It's caused by the fact that this change has created loss, right? It's created loss of control. It's created loss of sort of sleep. It's created loss of some health. It's also added a ton. I don't want to take that away. But but I do say, and we talked about this at the beginning, or before we started, I think if you're honest, you understand that the baby wants to ruin your relationship. Its goal is to ruin your relationship. if you said to the baby, hey, baby, would you like 100% of my time and energy and love and care and affection and emotional availability? The baby would say, yes, please, give me all of that. And they don't stop.
Right, they're little 13. Sponges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't. I mean, my 14-year-old is still that way, thankfully. But I think if you don't protect yourself from that influence, if you're not aware of that, then it can be really hard, you know, and again, it sneaks up on you. This divorce number that you're talking about, it's not right after the baby. It's right when the baby is about three, because it's been years now of just sort of missed connections and feeling spread too thin, and, you know, conflict is increasing. So it's definitely a complicated gig, for sure.
Well, and, you know, and I think it's really important to go back to something that you said about the physical impacts, because I read somewhere, and I don't remember where, that it actually takes a woman's body a full year to completely recover from pregnancy and childbirth. Because, I mean, our bodies really get traumatized in ways that we don't even know about. And, you know, then you show up for your 6-week postpartum checkup, and the doctor goes, okay, A-okay, you're cleared for sex. And the women are like, I'm what? And, you know, yeah, it's like, please don't tell my husband. I mean, I remember my son was six months old, I think. And I remember talking to a friend of mine, asking her, because I was like, will I ever want sex again? And she says, oh, yeah, when you quit breastfeeding, you know. But we forget that there are some natural ways to hopefully prevent pregnancy, although this same friend will tell you, don't count on breastfeeding being birth control. But there are some ways, you know, that nature tries to space out pregnancies, because it is so hard on women's bodies. And I think it's what couples do during those times, like you said, to keep intimacy going, not necessarily sex, but to keep intimacy going. And that's kind of hard when you're not feeling very good about yourself and you're tired and, you know, you got baby spit up.
Yeah, and I think that's just, you know, to me, it's about sort of going, I sort of just say, buck up, camper. Like, if you care about intimacy, you have to make it a priority. And again, I'm not talking about intercourse. I'm talking about, do you talk to each other? Do you rub each other's back or feet? Or do you just hold hands when you're walking? Do you have some kind of goal that you're chasing? I talk about spiritual intimacy, and people will push back sometimes because they're like, oh, we're not really churchy, but that's not even it, right? It's something about the value that you hold, or the lesson that you want to impart. That can be a place where you can dream and envision. And I think when you do that on purpose, you create intimacy, even if it's not yet sex. And then when it's ready, when you're ready for sex, or she's ready for sex, or the relationship is ready for sex, it's that much more. It's that much richer, I think, because you've laid the groundwork for the last 6 weeks, 6 months, whatever it is.
Right, and that's one of the things that it's really important that people recognize, that especially for women, sex, you know, being ready to be physically intimate is often a reflection of how they feel emotionally about the relationship. And one of the things that I think is a real challenge is that a lot of times women can get that emotional connection, that emotional need met, you know, through the baby, you know, or through the small child. Because, I mean, I know you know this as a parent. There's nothing quite like the feeling of those little arms around your neck giving you this hug. You know, it's an amazing feeling, and we need to make sure that we don't substitute the same amazing feelings that we get by being intimate, but emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually, you name it, with our life partner.
Yeah, and you know, so part of my gig in the therapy world is I'm what's called a certified Gottman therapist. So I'm certified in this body of research that was conducted by John Gottman, who is a marriage researcher, but he also did a whole bunch of parenting research. And he kind of dove into these couples who were divorcing. He noticed that spike and wanted to pay attention to what was going on and what was sort of causing it all. And just sort of speaking a little bit to this this piece of, you know, the mom getting some energy from the baby, one of the byproducts that leads to divorce actually is that dads tend to withdraw. They tend to remove themselves from the parenting equation. Maybe they dive into work, or maybe they dive into, you know, whatever distraction that they can, you know, that makes them feel good. And that comes at a high cost, you know. It comes at a high cost,
right,
not just for the relationship, but also for the baby. The baby needs the involved fathers, right? They need that sort of tactile, physical connection. They need the playfulness. They need the energy. They need different smell. They need differentiation.
Right.
So I think that there's a, again, all of these things are sort of connected to each other, right?
Right. And I want to talk about that a little bit more in just a minute, but I need to remind people that this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with marriage therapist and author Zach Brittle about how to protect your marriage once baby makes three. And if you're thinking about having children or find yourself being challenged with the ones you have, I invite you to have a conversation with me about how you can be both parents and partners at the same time. You can send me an email or give me a call and take advantage of my free, no-obligation, Create Your Best Marriage strategy session. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can call me at 919-924-0463. Now, Zach, I want to get back to this because this is such a critically important thing. And about the role of the dad and how he either withdraws or sometimes actually gets pushed away. Because I've had couples where, you know, the dads come in and they say, you know, I can't do anything right. I don't feed the baby right. I don't dress the baby right. I don't play with the baby right. So, you know, and the thing is men would rather do nothing than fail. So they pull themselves out, you know, and I always like to joke with people. I said, you know, if he gets the diaper on the right end of the baby, good job. You know, it's like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this whole parenting culture, it's designed for moms, right? I mean, that book you're talking about, What to Expect When You're Inspecting, that is, it's a pink book with flowers on the cover and a nice, you know, soft edge drawings and you know, starting there.
Yep.
And heading out, like, this whole industry has been sort of crafted to help moms make the transition to motherhood and not necessarily to help dads make the transition to fatherhood. So when the baby comes, the mom's kind of already an expert, right? So whether he withdraws because he's afraid to fail or because she pushes him out, it's definitely a big deal, and he needs to stay in and connected, because that is that's really just the work in the short term. And I think, you know, I lost my train of thought, but ask me that question. That's on your time.
Yeah, but that's you know, I mean, and it really is critical, because I know that one of the things, and you know, you watch men play with kids, and you know, they throw the kids up in the air and they roughhouse, and I'm not talking about with a newborn, but I'm talking about when they're a little bit older. And of course, all the mothers are like going, "Oh, don't drop the baby!" And of course, the guys aren't going to. I mean, they don't drop the baby, but it's sort of what you're talking about giving the children the full experience, both, you know, of both energies, both the maternal energy and the paternal energy, and the difference it makes and how it impacts, you know, it connects differently, creates different kinds of connections in the baby's brain depending on who they're interacting with.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and the opposite is also true, right? When dads withdraw, I mean, when dads are attached, they create attachment for the baby. When they withdraw, they teach the baby to withdraw. And then it becomes this kind of sort of who withdrew first situation, right? And, oh, the baby doesn't like me, or it doesn't let me hold you, and it doesn't let me hold him without crying. And I think that's where, again, just sort of impressing that how important it is to sort of lean into this thing, become an expert, man, like get excited about it. And at the same time, I would say to moms, like, the second best way to do something isn't a terrible way to do it.
Right.
You know, just because you figured out that, you know, you put the bottle in this part of the microwave instead of that part of the microwave, it doesn't mean that when he puts it in that part of the microwave that he's an idiot. You know,
different.
We're not going to break the baby, you know. It's really, really hard.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I like you say it's the second best way, and it's like, it may not be the second best way. It just may be an equally as good way. It's just not your way, and I do think that makes a huge difference in not necessarily correcting whether it's the mom or the dad. I mean, because as new parents, you get advice from all over the place. So this could just be from, you know, grandma or grandpa. You know, it's like, okay, you know, there's so many people who want to give you advice, and I think that's also part of the problem. And we have this idea that there must be, you know, you must be a perfect parent. And I just keep wanting to apologize to my son, who's my oldest, going, "Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. You know, I did the best I could, but, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. You were my guinea pig."
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know. What's a perfect parent, right? That's a crazy
There is
notion.
No such thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one of the other questions that I really want to talk to you about, because I think it's absolutely critical, and when I talk with my clients, I talk about the whole thing being a balancing act. You know, marriage is a balancing act between being who you are as an individual and being part of a couple. Then once you add in a baby, you know, it's kind of like the balance that you've gotten there is now you're wobbling. And I tell people, you don't take off hats, you just keep adding them on. You don't stop being an individual when you become a spouse and you don't stop being a partner when you become a parent. It's just, how do you make time for all of those things? And I think that's something that a lot of people really struggle with in today's society.
Yeah, well, you know, we sort of fetishize this idea of being too busy, and that's a badge of honor almost. How are you? I'm busy, you know, and then I don't have time for this, that, or other thing. And really what you're saying is, I'm not making it a priority, right? I always say, if you want to see what people's priorities are, you look at where they spend their time and their money, and that's how you can totally understand, you know, what people care about. And if you care about maintaining and protecting your relationship with your partner, then you got to make time for that. And that may mean that you have to spend some money on it. You might have to employ a babysitter, or you might have to, you know, go out of your way to, you know, get out of the house a little bit. I'm not a prescriber of date night. I'm not like, oh, you have to have a date night. But I do think that you have to prioritize the time that you sit still and look at one another and check in with one another, and also, like, I mean, let's go ahead and acknowledge that, like, you have a responsibility to the baby. I'm not saying put the baby away in the drawer and go away. Like, that baby needs your attention. You need to feed it. You need to make sure it doesn't drown in the bathtub. You need to make sure that it gets plenty of sleep and love. But what it really needs, is a strong sense of attachment. And they're going to learn that from you and how well its parents are attached to one another. And I think that's the work, really, of just saying, hey, what the best thing we can do for our baby is to stay connected to one another. How you do that is, well, I think, unique to every couple, right? Like, you have to find your strategies and based on your support system and your resources that you have available.
Absolutely, and I do think that that's, you know, critical, because I get this all the time. I mean, I many, many years ago, I had a couple come in, and I think their baby was 6 weeks old. And the first thing out of her mouth was, don't tell me I have to spend less time with my baby. And I went, okay. I get it. And, you know, babies are designed to encourage us to take care of them. I mean, I had somebody once tell my husband, it was a coworker of my husband's, and he says, you know why they make babies so cute, don't you? And my husband said, no, why? He said, so you don't throw them out the window. It's part of why, when you look at all the mammals, kittens and puppies and ducklings, well, they're not mammals, but anyway, all the babies of any species, it's like, oh, aren't they so cute? It's like, they're designed that way.
Yeah, they better be, yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes my partner's not so cute, you know, if it's the mom, maybe you haven't been able to shower for a couple of days, or if it's the dad, you know, maybe he hasn't shaved, or, you know, they're not so cute. And, you know, and it's really about learning, I think, what this being a parent is all about. And, you know, and the worst thing in the world is not, quote unquote, disappointing your child, you know, because it's like, well, if your child doesn't get everything they want, that's, you know, first off, that's life. And, you know, it's not disappointing to tell them, no, your dad and I are going to dinner, or, you know, no, you have to go to bed and dad and I are going to watch this movie that you want to watch. You know, it's really okay to say no to them, or to say, you know, I mean, this came up with both my kids when they got further along in sports and stuff, and we said, you can do one athletic activity, because we wanted them to be healthy, and you can do one artistic endeavor, but we're not going to be driving hither and yon, spending all our time and all of our money, giving you everything, and I'm hearing my audience going, but what about getting into college? It's like, I have two that are in college. I can guarantee you they both got into every single college they applied to. So stop panicking. you know, and my son basically played baseball and was in the orchestra, and that was his entire extracurricular stuff, and he got into four pretty good universities. So I'm, you know, this idea that we have to, you know, have our children do every possible thing or we're denying them a future is not exactly accurate.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just to kind of caveat what you said a little bit ago, like, it's okay to say yes, it's okay to say no to your children. I absolutely believe that. But I think it's actually important to say yes to your partner, mm-hmm. and to show your kids that that's a priority for you, because that helps them set boundaries. It helps them, again, understand and create attachment. It helps model for them what it's going to be like when they get older. But I think to say, you know, yes to your partner is a really, really critical piece of the puzzle when you're, you know, adapting to this new reality of your family.
And I want to go back to something that you said earlier, because you were talking about doing this intentionally. And it is so critical to do it intentionally, because it's when the marriage is okay, when there aren't any problems, you know, nobody's arguing, you know, it's we're all kind of just living our day-to-day lives, it's really easy to put it on the back burner and think it's always going to be there. But, you know, and focus on the kids and do all this wonderful thing. But it's really about doing both. And then it's also important for people to take care of themselves individually as well. And I know a lot of moms go, well, I can't do that. It's selfish. I said, it's not selfish. You know, self-care is not selfish. If you're, I think we just have to continue to talk about this and offer assistance to couples who really want to do it, who really want the whole package.
Yeah.
And don't understand that, and don't really understand how to make that happen, because we don't really talk about it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I just, it's something that, it's a mantra that I have over and over again, whether you're talking about babies or sex or the way you handle your money or the way that you, you know, deal with your in-laws, you just got to do it with intentionality. Do it on purpose, because there's something about intentionality that I think is also good for kids, that they can look and say, Yeah. At least my parents were adults, you know, mm-hmm. about the way that they moved through the world.
And by the way, that doesn't mean they were perfect.
So,
Zach, can you let people know where they can find more information about you, what you do, how to enter into this parenting world with, you know, maybe more confidence?
I'm based out of Seattle. My practice is here, and I spend a lot of time with couples, and I think the best thing that you can do is get some resources, right? And the best resources are people who are in the same boat as you. They are just, they are having babies at the same time. They live near you. They can share childcare with you. They can share frustration with you. They can share hope with you. And I think it goes a long way to be sort of in the boat with people. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I guess, if you're looking for like the one secret, it's probably that.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I know you were talking before we got on the phone that in Seattle they have something, they have a parenting support group
PEPS
that you're involved
Seattle,
in.
Program for early parents. Yeah, it's called PEPS here in Seattle, Program for Early Parent Support. And they're just a local nonprofit that organizes groups for young families. But you can find those at your church. You can find those at your community center. Your hospital probably has resources.
Right.
There's lots of ways that you can sort of look around. I mean, shoot, you can probably go on Facebook and say, hey, anybody know anybody who had a baby in the last 6 weeks? And create some kind of network. And there's no shortage of resources, especially for moms. But I think dads who can get out and kind of compare notes, that's really important too.
Mm-hmm. So in all honesty, and we don't like talking about it, but marital satisfaction takes a hit when children come on the scene, and how you prepare for bringing home baby can often mean the difference between staying together or splitting up. So while you're practicing all that breathing that you need to do for the actual birth and decorating the nursery for when you bring baby home, you might want to take the time to strengthen your marriage for the extra weight it's going to take on. And so I encourage you to continue listening to the show, to go and get resources, get help, and until next week, stay loving.